Good morning again. We're an intimate yet distinguished group tonight, this morning. Glad to see you all. Very distinguished. Our parsha this week is Bamidbar, and it's the beginning of the book of what is called in Numbers, and the reason it's called Numbers in English or in Latin or in Greek is because this first parsha includes a census of those who would be of military age. However, most of our commentaries talk less about that than talking about the first words, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, the first six words. Vayedaber Yah el Moshe b'midbar Sinai. And God spoke to Moses in the wilderness of Sinai. So I checked out this idea of wilderness and found a tremendous amount of connection between many traditions, Jewish, Christian, some cases Muslim, but as well Buddhist tradition. So I wanted to see what is a wilderness, you know. And we often talk about the trek of the Israelites in the desert, but the desert is really a mistranslation. It's not the sweeping sand dunes of the Sahara, etc. It's a wilderness. And I checked out that there is actually, in 1964, we have a Wilderness Act that was passed in Congress. And it defines wilderness as an area where the earth and its community of life, beautiful term, the community of life, are untrammeled by man. In 64, they still said man. Where a man himself is a visitor who does not remain. Okay, say that again. It's a really apt introduction to our discussion this morning. A wilderness is an area where the earth and its community of life are untrammeled. I love untrammeled. It's a great word. It should be a Yiddish word. Have you traveled, untraveled, right? And where man himself is a visitor, but does not remain. So this definition describes areas of land that are untouched and thriving without human interference. So that's very, I think, very helpful. Many of the commentators will talk about the fact that we're not talking about a desert, but we're talking an area like the Sinai. Anyone been to the Sinai here? Anybody? Wave? No? Well, I recommend it. It's remarkable because it's not a vast desert, because things do grow, and there are occasional, if you will, floods through the various wadis. So there is a community of life. It's not desolate, okay? It has some vitality to it. A colleague of mine, Rabbi Danan, says that central to our people's formative experience was the life of the desert nomad described in the Torah. From our earliest patriarchs traversing the Negev to the 40 years of our people wandering the Sinai. Now, prophets frequently desert a place to escape persecution as well as a space to commune with God. For instance, 2,000 years ago, the Dead Sea sect thought to be the Essenes would ever retreated to the Judean wilderness to escape the turmoil of Jerusalem. And in that staying in the Dead Sea, they basically wrote the Dead Sea Scrolls. So Midbar represents two faces of Torah. Two faces of Torah. I'm having a little bit of difficulty. Hold on a second. Give me my text to show. Okay, hold on one second. I'm sorry. Okay, so central to our Midbar, Rabbi Danan goes on, presents two faces of the Torah. In one sense, it is the opposite of the Garden of Eden, of course, lush with its growth. And it's untamed and it's uncultivated, awesome and dangerous. And this midbar is a symbol of all the times that we lose our way and wander aimlessly as individuals or as a society. The other aspect that the rabbis deal with a lot is the positive one of midbar. It presents openness, possibility, receptivity. Wandering in the desert was a paradigm of letting go and letting God. The Torah was given in the Midbar, and it is a coincidence that the same Hebrew letters, Mem Dalet Bet Resh, that spell Midbar, also spell Midaber, speech. The emptiness of the desert and its vast spaces and the awe it evokes allow for communication with the divine. Also, deserts are important ecosystems and supply many benefits to the earth. 300 million people worldwide live in wildernesses. We must respond to, of course, the climate change, which will cause these arid spaces to spread and perhaps create what we call now climate migration. So this idea of Sinai and this desert of Sinai is the question the rabbis often ask is, why Sinai? Why shouldn't the Torah have been given in Egypt or wait till the time of the arrival into Canaan? The goal of that, why is it given in a desert? So the sages taught that the Torah was given through three things: fire, water, and wilderness. Anyone who does not make themselves ownerless, like the wilderness, cannot acquire the wisdom of the Torah. And that's why in Bamidbar Rabbah, the Midrash on Bamidbar, it says that this specifies the wilderness of Sinai. So another question they ask is, well, why was the Torah given on what is called Mount Sinai, or more correctly, Mount Horeb in the wilderness of Sinai? It was because it was not a very large mountain. It was because it was, quote-unquote, as it says, a humble mountain. And they also emphasize the fact that by being given in Bimidbar, in the wilderness, that there is no ownership. No one can claim that the Torah is only for them. And this is, of course, the root of what we call the universalist side of Judaism, which sees that the teaching of Torah was given in 70 languages, so all of the earth, all of people on earth, could benefit from it. So becoming empty and abandoned like the wilderness is really what we talk about when we combine the Torah and this teaching with our meditative practice. A person must first make themselves into a midbar, an inner empty wilderness that is cleared of all the weeds and brush that obstruct true perception and feeling, a wilderness that returns to the first purity of nature. Now, divine revelation and the Torah arise from the physical space of wilderness, of midbar. The burning bush, and then Mount Sinai, a heart infused with divine Torah, arises through a person's mindful cultivation and their own interior wilderness. And one should seek to attain, and this is a technical word, of hefker. Hefker means to be unbounded. Unbounded is hefker. And in our meditation, we hope to have a feeling or a sitting that is unbound by pride and egoism of ownership, or being unattached, of being unattached to materialism. In Hefker consciousness, we train our spiritual sight to see the divine presence that dwells beneath the surface, beneath the many golden calves of our obsessions, possessions, wayward priorities. This is a radical reinvention of the concept of Hefker, a neutral halakha category of abandonment and ownerlessness. In the rabbinic understanding of hefker, it would mean that no one claims ownership of, let us say, something you find in the street, right? You're supposed to let people know that you found it, and if nobody claims it, then you may take it, but you have to at least try to find out if indeed it does belong to someone. But for the most part, when something is hefker, as I said just a moment ago, it is ownerlessness that we are experiencing. So in this reading, Midbar may be said to embody a pure state of emptiness, right? The term that's used in both the Jewish tradition, the Buddhist tradition, shunyata in the Buddhist tradition, and for us it's ayin, the the nothingness, if you will, and the inner cleansing that allows us to go deeper onto a spiritual path. Become hefker kamidbar, become ownerless, like the midbar, the wilderness, is a process of letting go of our imprisonment in materiality, in the, and to be liberated into the vastness of the inner wilderness. I looked up a quote by Rev Nachman of Bratslav, often quoted in many, many traditions, that taught that the most profound opening of the heart to God takes place in the physical space of darkness and wilderness, he says, the frightening ground of loneliness and alienation. And Reb Nachman, as all of you know, created a meditative technique called hitbodedut, meaning solitude, that we are able to empty our minds and hearts of, and this is a quote from Eitan Fishbein, son of a colleague of mine, of society's overwhelming drumbeat, where the ultimate bitul hayesh, the erasure of superficial mundane consciousness, becomes possible. And we are truly open in all of our vulnerability before divinity in that place called Midbar. We are able to break open the heart in ways we didn't know were possible, to cry out to God from a place of the deepest emotional honesty. The Midbar is an inner place of psyche as much as it is a terrestrial location. So in Reb Nachman's teachings, as many of us know or not know, he would urge people to go out into nature, not necessarily into wilderness, and basically speak out from a deep need within, and speak in any language you know, and basically find a way to use, and what I see is happening is that the divine serves the role of the blank screen, if you will, that many people, many therapists use. It's a place without judgment. It's a place of hearing and speaking, speaking and hearing. And that's what the desert is about. There's a wonderful drash by Rabbi Sachs, Jonathan Sachs, that I'm willing to send to you about wilderness and word. I can't quote all of it here, but it's really a very good essay that people would like to get it. Let me know, and I'll be glad to send it out. So we are dealing with this idea that we have the capacity to let go, to let go. We also want to avoid, however, a more pejorative meaning of hefker, something that is chaotic and uncontrolled, a free-for-all. And the openness of a midbar state of being is one that inspires kindness and generosity, the gentleness needed to sincerely love another person. And that gentleness is the silent speech of God. I love that term. The silent speech of God flowing through man and woman to be realized in living their moral lives. So if you take the insight of those who sit in solitude, and there are many Christian groups that sit in solitude as we do as well. So if you get that retreat, the going back from and create space, then we see that the breath of divine sustenance fills us and allows us to basically free ourselves and to come back into the world with a commitment to be in a place of compassion and that also of cultivating a deep humility. So the Torah only stands firm in one who makes himself or herself like a midbar, hefker, before those who are poor of mind and rich of mind. And he doesn't think of himself as better than his friend. On the contrary, he should be completely nullified, bitul hayesh, before his friend. And it is through this that they become united and bound up one with the other. One really can't create true relationships, certainly with friends, if one is not willing to sort of make it possible for that friend to enter into a relationship, giving that friend the space to be he or herself, truly be herself. And that's what I think good friendships are all about, that you don't have to operate with any kind of artifice that you can be your true selves and know that you are being loved and being, if you will, accepted. So there's much to say, and I found a number of other interesting quotes that I could go on with those for a long time. And I found it very interesting that certainly in Christian tradition, because of the need to somehow have Jesus replace Torah, Jesus goes into the Midbar for 40 days, not a common number, knowing the Jesus being a very knowledgeable Jew. But he there in the Midbar faces temptations, and he's able to overcome them and return back and, of course, go on his mission, which is unclear totally, but he certainly has a mission. So we also have, I went also to see some Buddhist sources, and I found that there's actually a whole theory of wilderness in Buddhist teaching. For instance, His Holiness the Dalai Lama wrote, "The places often have a power that we cannot easily describe or explain. When approached with an awareness of the emptiness and luminosity underlying all appearances, they can encourage us to expand our vision not only of ourselves, but of reality itself." So the idea of wilderness, a natural environment largely unmarked by human settlement, has long been central to Buddhism. Hold on, I guess found the quote I wanted to give you. Okay, so the idea of wilderness is a space where spiritual development begins, flourishes, and achieves fulfillment. The Buddha, as you know, began his quest by leaving the city and immersing himself in the wild. And throughout the millennia, Buddhist writers have promoted the benefits of living in the wilderness for working with body, mind, and emotion. In South Asian Buddhism, for instance, they have also the idea of the forest, and there are many forest refuge possibilities. And of course, solitude in nature does not mean that you will become lonely, but you will become hopefully inspired. So wilderness is one of the spaces where Buddhism takes place. I like that term, Buddhism takes place, because people often say, you know, what does it mean? It means it's a place where your awakening takes place. And perhaps the wilderness is a good place for that awakening to happen. As both an imagined and physical environment, it is a fundamental means by which Buddhists have characterized the world specifically as a good place and have sought to craft a good human life in relation to the world. And it is a realm often said to be devoid of people, even when it teems with life. Wilderness is morally an elevated space. And in that elevated space, we get the idea that we can indeed achieve a sense of true self. What, how in the Buddhist tradition there isn't really self. But I found a number of other sources that I found were very helpful. One other one is a sutra, and it's called the Andaka Vinda Sutra, and it gives this story. It's the title of the sutra is "Let the Wilderness Serve." At one time, the Buddha was residing in Magadha, near a place called Andhakavinda, which is the name of the sutra. The sutra is also a teaching, teaching. At that time, the Buddha was seated under the open sky in the deep darkness of the night, and this is what they use the term, and the rain god was making it rain, drop by drop. And then the Brahma, Sahampati, as the night was passing away, lighting up Andhakavinda with a surpassing brilliance, approached the Buddha and stood to one side. And as he stood to one side, the Brahma Sahampati offered up these verses in the presence of the Buddha. This is a wonderful way of understanding it, that the wilderness can serve us as well. And I'll conclude with this because it's just a wonderful way of understanding. Let the wilderness serve you for your seat and bed, From fear in the fearless released. In places where the frightening serpents abide, lightning clashes and the rain god thunders in the blinding darkness of the deepest night. There he sits, the monk who vanquished his dread. Let the wilderness serve for your seat and bed. Go about, set free from the ties that bind. But if, perchance, you don't find there your bliss, then live in a group and watch over yourself, mindful, proceeding from alms, from house to house, mindful with guarded faculties. Guard is a true way of achieving wisdom. So I will open it up a little bit, and I just, you know, want to ask you to comment on that and how you understand wilderness, how you understand it, and if any of you have had experiences in the wilderness, I would love to hear about that as well. We all would love to hear it. So who would like to break the ice?